right. So today we're going to be kicking it off with a few kind of question related, either really relationships with people, relationship with God, and also relationships in marriage, because those are all the kind of questions that came into us. So really the first question is one that me and my wife get commonly when we sit down with a lot of young people, a lot of people aspiring, and we kind of have the privilege to be able to work with a lot of people and disciple them or sit down with them and just counsel them or mentor, whatever it is that you want to call it. And so we have, quite a bit experience of working with people on a one-on-one basis. And one of the main questions that a lot of people ask often is, is when to have a mentor, how to pick a mentor. It's a big relationship thing. Mm-hmm. How to seek out a mentor. When is the time right to find a mentor? What will that look like? And then also where do you find accountability within that mentor? How does that look like? Mm-hmm. And so first I'm going to just kick it over to my wife where she can make some comments on it. So babe, when is the right time to find a mentor and what should you look for in a mentor?
Well, I personally didn't have pretty much a mentor when I was younger. Obviously, you have your parents in that aspect to help guide you through the life. But right now, I think being in ministry and us having such a significant, amazing youth ministry, I think the youth should start looking for mentors at that age in junior high, high school, looking up to somebody that they really can just find guidance in. It's not an everyday thing where they're hitting them up and let's do this, let's go to lunch, let's go to breakfast, let's do this. It's a mentor, someone that can guide you through life, through the trials that you're facing in junior high, high school, dating, marriage. A mentor is someone that is older, wiser, is knowledgeable in what you're asking or wanting from a mentor. And then they're going to hold you accountable to that. They're going to hold you accountable to what you've asked them of. So I think that for anyone right now looking for accountability or looking for a mentor, start now if you don't have one. It's never too late to have accountability or a mentor.
Mm-hmm. And, part of it is what you said right at the beginning. You know, people often say, well, I'm looking for someone who can, go to lunch with me, who I could spend time with, who will answer my phone calls, mm-hmm. who will mm-hmm. hang out with me, who will this and that. And when they're explaining it, I'm kind of like, you're not looking for a mentor. You want a friend.
Right.
You want a friend to give you advice. You want a friend to hear your problems and mm-hmm. stuff like that. And that's okay. I mean, we all need friendship, but that's a totally different conversation.
Yeah.
You know, if you're looking for a mentor and you want a mentor, basically you're saying you want to find somebody that's killing the game that you aspire to. So in mm-hmm. marriage, same thing. Like if you're looking for marriage mentors, you're looking at people that, they're not going to be perfect, but you look at that and say, man, that looks like an incredible marriage.
Right.
That they look like they're killing it.
They've been in the game for 30 years.
They've been in the game. They're happy, all that kind of stuff. Or same thing when in business. When I look for a business mentor, I'm not looking at, oh, let me see a guy who's just starting his business. Right. What is he gonna offer me other than we're gonna make some mistakes with each other exactly. and learn from each other?
Exactly.
When you want a mentor, you want somebody who's literally successful at what it is that they do. If you're in ministry, you want to look for somebody who has a successful ministry.
Right.
And then if they're gonna be your mentor, anyone who has a level of success, it means that they spend a lot of time at it, which mm-hmm. means they're not going to be available often.
Right.
And a lot of people start getting discouraged with mentors because they mix up friendship and mentor. Mm-hmm. And they think, I'm going to find somebody who can spend a lot of time with me.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if they're able to spend a lot of time with you, chances are they're probably not successful. Right. Because if they have a lot of time, they're probably not focused in the right areas.
Right.
But if they're successful, it takes a lot of time. So don't just get discouraged as you're pursuing a mentor that they're not always available. They don't always answer your phone calls. They don't always text back.
Yeah.
Because you're saying, well, that's the exact reason why I look up to them. Because they are busy. They are successful.
Yeah.
I'm not going to take it personal. And a lot of people, even for people with me, they've given up on me because they've asked me to be their mentor. And I've said, hey, I'm really busy. I'm traveling. I'm flying. I'm preaching. I'm doing this. I'm doing that. If I can't always call you back, I want you to know that I love you and I don't mean anything by it. Please don't take it personal. People often nod and say, oh, yeah, for sure. And then the first couple times I don't answer their call, they're like, oh, he's not my mentor anymore because I wasn't his priority. Well, you are my priority, but I have priorities.
Exactly.
So that you want to find a mentor who, when you have time with them, you're ready with questions. When you sit in the car with them, when you take them to lunch, it's not like, oh, so, how's your day? How have you been successful?
Right.
Like, oh, I don't know. How can I answer that? It's like so many years, but it's like coming and saying, hey, this is the issue I'm having. What would you suggest I do about it?
Right.
And there are times with my mentors where I literally get 10 minutes with them. And when I get on the phone with them, I mean, I shoot them with 50 questions and I have 25 left over because we only answered, 25.
Right.
Yeah. So mentorship, look for people that you genuinely look up to, and do everything you can strive after them. If you're going to ask them to lunch, pay for their lunch.
Yeah.
Don't ask them to, you know,
right.
If you want to build that relationship, you go out of their way. And I think sometimes, you know, I've been really impressed with people who they've said, "Hey, Adam, I want you to be my mentor." And I've just watched them. Like, I posted on Instagram, "Hey, I'm going to be here preaching." And they drove 1 hour, 2 hours to be there.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll be like, "Hey, what are you doing here?" And they're like, "Well, you know, I'm just here to support."
Yeah.
To me, I'm like, wow, this person really is hungry.
Yeah.
And then there's other people who say, "Hey, Adam, whenever you go somewhere, could you take me with you? Because I just want to see that life."
Right.
It's like, well, no, I can't do that. Right. You know, because I don't know where your heart is in this. So you want to be able to show your mentors that they can say anything to you and you're not going to give up. You're not going to walk away.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that for me, in our relationship and even in our marriage, we've found our accountability with someone really close to us, which has been my sister-in-law and my brother-in-law, your brother, Nathan and Sanaz. And it's just an accountability that it's a reassurance to where me and Sanaz don't talk every day. But if I ever needed a question or anything about marriage or anything just about her insight of her years of being married and how she dealt with it, because our pasts are pretty much similar, and so how we deal with our past as well. She's just been there for me in a guiding way. She's not there for me all the time because she has a life, she has kids, and I respect that. She's mm-hmm. grinding as a mother, mm-hmm. she's grinding as a wife, and that's something that I look up to as well. So for me, it's not an everyday thing, and I'm okay with it. And I also do have another friend who I consider accountability and mentor, and she's actually pretty close in my age, but I believe she has an old soul.
Mm-hmm.
And so she's the one that I like to bounce, like you said, questions off. "Hey, you know what? This situation went poorly," or, "Hey, how do I handle this situation?" And it's not an everyday thing because I shouldn't have issues every day.
Mm-hmm.
And then she'll check in with me 2 weeks later. "Hey, how'd that situation go? Or what did you learn from it? Did you grow?" Or she'll even congratulate me and say, "Haha, Ashley, you're growing." Mm-hmm. You're growing up. Yeah. But I think having a mentor and accountability is very crucial right now in the time that we live in, because it's easy to let your flesh rise up and fail. And your mentor or your accountability is just going to pick you right back up.
Mm-hmm.
A friend may be doing the same thing with you. You don't know.
Yeah.
A mentor accountability should be ahead of you to not let you fall, but to build you back up and meet you where they're at.
Yeah.
A friend, technically, they're probably doing the same thing you're doing.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And really, a mentor should have the license to really keep it 100 with you.
Oh, absolutely.
And I often tell people, you know, if you respect somebody, go up to them and say, "What are some things that you think that I can improve on?"
Yeah.
And then just bite your teeth and get ready to take it, because
it's not pretty.
Yeah, it's not pretty. And being told things you need to work on, it's not comfortable, but it's incredible in your own personal development and growth. And I often ask people, you know, who come and ask me, "Hey, what are some things I could do right now?" I really just tell them, find some people you respect who have spent some time around you, mm-hmm. and ask them that question.
Right.
And you'll be pleasantly surprised that the person that you think you are is not that person.
Not at all.
And it could come in two ways. Like, you could think you're a hotshot and the people around you go, "Hey, listen, like, you need some improvement." And you're right. Like, "What? I didn't see that." But you need that. And you don't say, when they say something you don't like, you say, "Oh, well, it's time to find a new mentor."
Yeah.
Who's going to start telling me good things. It's like, no, that person loves me. They tell me the truth. Or it's either one: you think you're a hotshot and you realize, "Hey, I need to improve on some things." Or you have a low self-view of yourself.
Right.
You know, you just your self-reflection, you think it's poor. Mm-hmm. And then you get around somebody who you say, "Hey, what do you think about me?" And then they start speaking life into you, and they're giving you perspective that you've never thought before.
Right.
And I've gotten that on both sides before. You know, I've had mentors who've told me, "Hey, Adam, you're not hot stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You actually need to work on this area and this area."
Oh,
and
absolutely.
When this happens, and, but then I've heard other people on another end who've called me and said, "Hey, who I consider mentors and people I look up to." They say, "Hey, Adam, I want to tell you how much I look up to you."
Yeah.
"And I want to tell you how much you've changed me."
Right.
I think to myself, man, I look up to this person so much.
Right.
And they look up to me, like, but they wouldn't share those things unless I've given them the freedom to feel like they can tell me anything at any
speak
time.
Into your life.
And
absolutely.
I'm not going to cut the relationship off.
Mm-hmm.
And I often get scared to tell people the truth, because I go, man, I know if I say this, They're going to stop showing up.
Stop hanging out with me. Mm-hmm. Probably talk about me.
Yeah. But I love them so much that I want to see them improve. I see so much gifting and talent in there. Yep. But there are some improvements, but they're not someone who's going to take it well. So instead, you just bite your teeth. You say, okay, well, I'm not going to say anything.
Yeah.
And then that person, a year, 2 years from now, I had that recently with somebody who, you know, I had just been silent in their life. Mm-hmm. Because they weren't taking criticism well.
Right.
And I really wanted the best for them, but they didn't receive it that way. And a few months later, I mean, they literally just crashed and burned.
Yeah.
And they called me and they're like, hey, finally, they asked a question that they never asked before. What do you think about what I've been doing? And I let them have it. This is what I think. And they're like,
I think, why didn't you tell me?
Yeah. Yeah. You heard me on the phone. And I'm like, well, here's what it is. Like, here's why I think you crashed and burned. And they're like, why didn't you tell me this in the first place? Because I'm like, the person you were 6 months ago wasn't a person who was ready to handle what it was that I was going to share with you. But now you're ready because you've come to me and you've asked something really big. What is it that I can improve on? Yep. So if you respect anyone, even your spouse, go up to them one day and say, hey, what are some things you think I can work on? And just get ready because they know you better than sometimes you even know yourself.
We've done dates like that where we've sat across the dinner table and said, what can I improve on, not only as a person, but within my marriage with you? And, and where can I do better as a wife?
Yeah.
And I think it's okay to self-reflect and ask that question, humble yourself, and in a sense, lower your ego a little bit to hear the truth. Yeah. Truth is always good. Truth is what builds you up. It's where lessons are learned. And it's how you grow as a person to be better for everyone around you, your spouse, your kids, your family. I think, it doesn't hurt. It really doesn't. I mean, I enjoy it, but when you tell me when I do wrong, but then sometimes, like I said, I bite my teeth. I may cry. I probably cried a couple times when he's told me what I need.
She needs Jesus really bad.
I'm crying a lot, probably. Like, how dare you think that of me? But no, it's good. It's all in our relationship. Our marriage has been the best because we can be honest with each other in that self, where we are each other's accountability as well. I'll go to him. I'll go to Adam and say, hey, how did I do in this area? And I know he's the most honest, truthful person, and he'll give it to me, even though if I hate it and I have to take it and reflect. And then 2 weeks down the line, I'll come back and say, hey, did you see? And he'll say, yep. It looks better. Yeah. You did better.
It's okay.
It's okay.
Yeah. Okay. With that in mind, we're talking about some mentorship. Now we're going to move on to the next topic of conversation. So let's check it out. Coming right now. All right. So for this next topic, it's kind of twofold from what we've seen from kind of some of the questions come in, which, you know, I know me and my wife will be able to both speak on. So, you know, the first part of it is, you know, me and you both, we full-time jobs, we work together also, but we work in ministry together. And then I also have a lot of other things that go on. So, you know, some people have asked, you know, how do you spend time together when you work a lot of hours?
Yeah.
You're a person. So anyone who's, you know, maybe you're even dating, but you're both going to school, you're both work, you got a job. How do you spend time together? And how do you make your marriage a priority when you're people with big dreams and big visions? And then also the other aspect of what are some ways that people can unplug. So multiple questions that people have asked, but I've just thought I missed them, mixed them together. Is what are some easy ways that you can unplug? Some people have asked specifically in ministry, but I'll just go all around when you're living a busy life. And then also, how do you make your relationship or relationships, even friendships, a priority when you're such a driven person, striving after for some things in life and after really God also? It's a really busy schedule. And so, babe, why don't you take it away first with, you know, how do you make spending time together priority? And you can speak on my level of my busyness and how we do it, you know.
Well, obviously you didn't mention you had multiple businesses and obviously working full-time ministry and being pulled every which way. Time between us is very important because I love my man and I want to be around him all the time. almost too much, but we had to communicate a lot. So obviously he's a very driven, but I also had to take a back seat and say, where is God taking him? I couldn't be selfish in this relationship. So me seeing where God was taking him and us having an understanding of where God is taking him outside of businesses or with outside businesses, with CEOs and realtors and everything like that. I had to personally be secure within our marriage and our relationship to say, there are going to be times where we may not have a lot of time together. But if I ever said, hey, Adam, I saw you this week, but I didn't see you and I didn't get to hang out with you. I didn't get to spend time. There's a difference between seeing someone, like I saw you and I see you. And I have always mentioned that to him, like, hey, I didn't really see you this week. We didn't get to hang out. So the next week he's like, you know what, babe, I'm making it a priority. We have our Monday, Tuesdays off together. Mondays are generally our days where we're spending at the movies, shopping, eating, predominantly eating. He makes it more of a priority knowing how I feel. We have such a great communication now within our marriage that we make time for each other when we know we haven't seen each other. And it's just, if he may feel that way or if I may feel that way, we're not afraid to say, hey, I didn't see you this week. And meaning I didn't get that extra time with you. I didn't get to hang out with you at home or go see a movie or let's have a date night. So for us to unplug, it's us just speaking up and being honest within our relationship to say
communicating
is big. Yeah. There have been weeks on end where we have been going. I've been with my family or he's been working or it's just ministry and events. We have to literally come back and say, hey, Monday, Tuesday is our time.
Yep.
No leeway, no nothing, no rain checks, no nothing, unless it's an emergency. And I think for people that are very driven within their lives and within their jobs and they're trying to seek out relationships, you got to have fun as well.
Yeah.
feel like God is going to bless you even more, especially if you're investing. And like you said, investing and like back to the last one, mentoring, if you are that successful within a business, but making relationships still important because if anyone makes relationships important, that's you. You make your relationships very important. And that's friendships, that's your marriage, that's your family. So for us, though, making time to unplug, it's communicating. Communicating is saying, hey, I need that me time right now.
Yeah. I think in the same way, too, like, you know, there always has to be, you know, especially for, I believe, the wife in the situation, if she's supporting a husband that's doing a lot and busy and work, and then vice versa, if the husband is supporting the wife, but the husband, he mentally take things a little differently. But for the wife and her, if her husband's really busy all the time and he's, you know, she starts to devalue herself and think, my husband thinks those things are more important than me. Mm-hmm. So what I always say, and, you know, what's worked for us is we schedule things out every 90 days. So every 3 months we have something really big planned, and you need a plan for your budget, you know? Yes. So, you know, we do different things, but my wife can tell you every 90 days, and I'll just give you an example of what my common life looks like. And, it's not to be like showy in any way. It's just to show, you know, my busyness so that if you're saying you're a busy person, you can kind of relate to me as well, or you could say, oh man, maybe I'm not that busy. I thought I was busy, you know, but I'm not that busy. So there's a lot of things that I do. Not only, you know, am I a pastor on staff at my church, Abundant Living Family Church, not only am I on the leadership position in my church, that means I also manage a lot of people on teams in our church. I manage about 30 employees at the church. On top of that, you know, I'm also one of the principal communicators at our church. So I'm always preparing messages and sermons, which those take anywhere to 15 to 25 hours each message that you do. So I'm one of the principal communicators. So I'm always writing sermons. On top of that, you know, I have a marketing and digital branding company. So I travel all over, you know, United States, even sometimes the world, and working with branding with people, whether it's churches or businesses or whatever. And we talk through logistics and change on what they can do with their brand. And so always phone calls, always Skype messages. Yeah. I consult for, you know, and work with companies that work with the country of Israel, you know, people that are working with the nation's politics. And we talk about how can we reach the next generation through digital platforms. So that's something that I'm doing literally weekly. And then I'm also traveling and speaking and working with churches on how they can reach people of the next generation. And that's a constant thing. So in 1 month, I could be on multiple flights, be on multiple meetings. People can be in and out of the office. On my days off, I could be getting lunches and dinners. And then also on top of that, I sit on you know, a global leadership board for an app called Pray.com, which I absolutely love. Pray is my, I believe Pray.com is the future of churches in relating to people. And so it's one of my obsessions of just wanting to just make Pray as big as possible, because I believe it just is going to change so many lives. And so I'm driving to Santa Monica all the time, where their headquarters are, and we're meeting all the time and going over stuff like that. And then on top of that, you know, I have a wife, you know, and I have friends.
Yeah.
And so in all of that stuff that I'm doing, you know, what I have to do with my wife, is we have to create non-negotiables that say, hey, in 3 months on July, this and this and this, you're taking 4 days off, you're taking a week off. So when those busy seasons come with my wife, she can hold to the goal, which is that non-negotiable.
Right.
Whereas when I just tell her, babe, we're going to do something when things slow down. I mean, that's so relative. Mm-hmm. And Lord willing, God breathe on what you're doing. You shouldn't slow down. Right. Hopefully he's giving you more and more kingdom to expand in.
Absolutely.
And so if that's the case, things will never slow down. So you have to say, this is where we put our foot down.
Yeah.
This is where the non-negotiable is. And if I lose a client or whatever as a result of it, you know, or a friend, so be it.
Right.
My marriage means more to me than that. And that could mean for you, if you use the app Hotels the Night, you can get a nice 4-star hotel in San Diego for $100 a night.
Yep.
Because they want to fill the room.
Yeah.
And it's usually $450 a night, and you're getting it that night for $100.
Yep.
And so you tell your wife, hey, we're going to go away for 2 days to San Diego. It's going to cost us $250.
Yeah.
You know, that's 2 or 3 restaurant times that if you just save a couple times, like, you could do it. You can go and relax, absolutely. And you could go and have fun.
Especially if you're having all those businesses and there's money coming in too.
Yeah. Yeah. And so prioritize what's important, and make sure that between you and your spouse, or you and your boyfriend, your girlfriend, or whatever it is that you're striving to, create non-negotiables in your life. And if you want to have a successful relationship, I should probably be able to come to you right now and say, what are your non-negotiables?
Right.
So for me, sometimes we're busy on Tuesdays, but Mondays for you and I, since that's both of our days off, that is an absolute non-negotiable. Right. Ashley knows that I will not take a meeting.
Yeah.
I will barely take a phone call. Yeah. I won't answer an email until Tuesday.
Yeah.
So even if it's a busy weekend or a busy week, she knows, hey, Monday's coming up.
Yeah.
I know that's my day that I'm going to say, let's go to the movies. I'm going to go to LA, whatever it is. And we're going to have that time together. So create non-negotiables in your marriage. And then also, well, what are ways that you unplug, babe? How do you unplug? What relaxes you?
A bed.
Oh my gosh.
A bed and snacks and a couch and a blanket. Oh. What else?
So boring.
Yeah. The way he unplugs is completely different. So that's where it's funny, where we have come to the common ground of we unplug out of movies. We both enjoy movies, whatever it may be, the new ones that are coming out. I enjoy Disney movies more than anything. Our unplug used to be Disneyland until my husband's life completely was a 180, where he's now around thousands of people all the time. So Disneyland is not an unplug for him, because he does not want to be around thousands of people at Disneyland. But the way that I like to unplug is, honestly, on the couch with my dogs, with my husband, cuddled up, watching movies, or at a movie theater. But mainly, I'm just a homebody. I really am a homebody. Love my husband, love my family, anything like that. That's the way that I unplug. Don't talk about work.
Mm-hmm.
Don't talk about you and I unplug both through social media. Scrolling.
Yeah.
Yeah. Scrolling through the social media. We end up rabbit trailing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Finding
I know somebody who I'm not gonna give their name, because then everybody will call them out. I know somebody who, he has a rule with his family, because you know, work is just so stressful and there's always stuff going on, that every day when he comes home, his wife gives him 30 minutes on the couch, not bothering him at all. Right. And he gets to just deep dive in Instagram for 30 minutes and just relax.
And we generally get all the memes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
he starts sending us all the funny stuff. But that's something that's worked for their family, because he's so stressful. If he comes home and his wife is like, what'd you do today? What's this? What's this? Go clean the room. Go do this. Yeah. Get the kids this. Gets the kids this. He's like, I can't handle that. So his unplug is, give me 30 minutes to do this. And then once I am able to detox. I'm going to come out of it. Hey, what do I need to do? What do we got to clean? What do we got to do this and this? So that's what's worked for him. And it's finding, you know, finding out what works for you. And so, you know, for me, I just have an issue where my way of unplugging is working more, and it's a problem.
That's a huge issue.
It's something I'm completely aware of.
Can you comment on these podcasts? Cause that's anyone that likes to work has an unplug.
that is my unplug. So for me, when I want to relax, I'm like, you know, what's something new we can create? What's something new? Who's a new person that's, you know, we've been trying to meet up with and who I can go out with and have lunch with. And I just really like, you know, developing relationships with people. So that's my relax. You know, I'll tell my wife like, hey, let's go to Orange County. Let's go to this dinner that these people I met on Instagram who just killing the game. I reached out to them. I asked them if I can get them dinner and they said, yeah, I really love doing that. You know, like I love growing. I love knowing that tomorrow when I wake up, I'm going to be better than I was yesterday. And for me, that's what's relaxing is being proud of myself on a daily basis. Even though there's tons of times that I fail and make mistakes, I like growing, and that's what relaxes me. And then shopping relaxes me. So
yeah, that does.
I like to go shopping. So when I'm really stressed, you know, I go, okay, Adam, you're going to spend $200, go to the mall. And
you're
that's your limit.
Say $100. I'm gonna say, what can you buy with $100?
$100. It's like $200. Go to Cabazon, and then find something just to retail therapy, have some relaxing time. So there's some of the ways to unplug. I think those are some of the ways that you can spend time together when you're busy. Really create some non-negotiables. Find the things that you relax in, and with your spouse, find things that mutually work for you guys.
Right.
And if it's nothing, you know, start having conversations around it and find those things. But here's what we're going to do. We have something really special. If you're listening to this on Anchor, or you're listening to any other podcast form, you know, we're using an app called Anchor to do our podcast, and they have something really cool. When you subscribe to our podcast or when you just set up an account, people can actually leave voice questions just about life, and we'll actually play their recording here on our podcast, and we'll answer and interact with you. So if you're listening to this, you could just go to anchor.fm/dominion, because our podcast is called Dominion Podcast. So anchor.fm/dominion, just create an account, and then type in our name again, Dominion Podcast, or you know, Adam Messam, we should pop up. And then right on the top hand right, you'll be able to put send a message, and you can send us a voice message, and we'll actually feature it here on our podcast, and we'll be able to have a conversation with it. So let's go ahead and go to, as we conclude our podcast, let's go to our last question, and we'll conclude with this thought right now.
Hi, Adam. I had a question. I was wondering, how do you know you're going down the right path? I recently converted into Christianity. I actually got saved at your guys' church. I do attend your guys' church Wednesdays and Saturdays. I just want to make sure that I know I'm going down the right path, as into getting my life together and having the strength and the belief and the hope that the path I'm going down right now is what God has planned for me.
That's a great question. I think for a lot of us that are new to our faith or new to our walk with God, it is uneasy. It's unsettling. It's what's next? Where does God want me next? What I know that the pastor's saying there's a purpose for me, but what is it? And I think that's what you should hone in on in your walk and in your growth, is asking God what your purpose is and finding out what your giftings are from him. Everyone has a gifting. Everyone has a purpose that was put on this earth. So I believe that a new Christian, you're already walking in your purpose. You've taken that step. You're a part of a church. I would say now getting planted in something that you love, either it's children's, youth, young adults, our new vibe that just launched, our college ministry. It's finding out your purpose and your walk with God. And I believe that blessings are going to come just from you even taking that leap of faith to say, God, is this right? Am I doing the right thing? Absolutely. You're following him. Mm-hmm. And that's the main thing that us as Christians that we're supposed to do on this earth is to follow him. And then he will guide our steps. So I believe that it's allowing God to guide your steps without fear, with confidence and then finding a purpose behind where you feel called. And that's, you can literally go to children and say, hey, you know what, that didn't work out. Or, hey, I'm going to go try youth. That doesn't work. God will lead you to where he needs you to be. It's not you trying to figure it out. God has already figured it out for you. It's you just listening to him. Continue to show up to church. Continue to get planted within our church. And I'm just so excited that you're coming to our church.
That's the amazing thing, Marissa, is just first of all that you're part of the family now, and that's incredible. And congratulations on making the greatest decision of your life and choosing Jesus as your Lord and Savior. And I think that's incredible that, you know, you're part of the faith now, and I'm so excited for your future. And one of the things is, you know, that I often tell people is, you know, you're kind of asking the question, how do I stay on the right path, or what the Bible would say is the straight and narrow.
Yeah.
Narrow is the way. Really it's what you said. So if I were to say that, you know, I only spend time once every other month with my wife, and all other times I don't even sleep in the same bedroom as her, and I only see her once every other month, and that's when we do stuff. And I came to you and said, hey, me and my wife are having issues, that probably wouldn't catch you off guard.
Right.
If then I responded and said, well, I spend no time with my wife, you think that's a problem?
Yeah.
And it'd be like, like if you want to have a great marriage, you're going to have to spend time with your spouse.
Yeah.
It's the same thing with God. Like if you want to have a great relationship with God, then you're going to have to spend time with him. Mm-hmm. And I love it what you said. You're doing all of the right things. You said how you come to Wednesday service, how you come to Sunday service. So what you're doing is you're saying every chance I get to be around the people of God, to be around God's word, I'm going to do that. And I'll tell you this, if you're around God enough, you start to see your relationship with God grow more and more and more. And that could be seen through reading your Bible on a daily basis, listening to a podcast on a daily basis, could be through a sermon or worship or something like that. But the more I believe, and I'm a firm believer of this, the more time you spend with God and around the things of God, the more that you continue to stay on the right path.
Right.
Usually with people, they fall off the path because you look, they've kind of slowly stopped coming to church. They've slowly stopped hanging out with people in church. Mm-hmm. They started taking things more personal in church, started getting hurt by people more. And next thing you know, they went for 2 weeks, they haven't been to church, 3 weeks, they haven't been to church. And I know, you know, some people it's been 8 months, 10 months, 11, 12 months.
Just till they stop.
And then they come to me and say, hey, Pastor Adam, I'm having a difficult relationship with God. How do you, you know, how do you think I can, you know, start to feel him around me again? How do you think I can hear his voice again? And I think, well, the only way you can hear the voice of God is if you're in proximity with God. Mm-hmm. And that can be done in a lot of different ways. But I think the more reoccurring way is to be in church.
Yeah.
And for you, Marissa, I'd encourage you to join. Most churches have them now, like also we do at Abundant Living, is we have a growth track. It's a 4-week process. It happens every Sunday for us during our first service, and it helps you grow in your faith. And you spend 4 weeks with some of our leaders, and by the end of it, they help you plug into the church and grow in your faith. And I think if you do those type of things, you join, you check out Growth Track, you start getting around people of God, start hanging around people who are encouraging you, loving you, start coming to church more, and you're doing that, then you're going to see your trajectory of your entire life change. Absolutely. And you're just at the beginning of it. You know, this past December, I hit 10 years since I've been saved, and it's been the best 10 years of my life. And the Adam I was 10 years ago is not the Adam that I'm now. And I know in 10 years from now, when it'll be 20 years since I've been saved, I'll be totally different than even I am right now.
Yeah.
And I thank God that people give me the grace to grow.
Yeah.
I've been graced to grow. And I'd say that with you, Marissa, like we have nothing but love for you. We know that you're going to grow, and we don't expect you to be anyone but yourself.
Absolutely.
And love God and get close to him. And you're going to see 10 years from now in 2028, you're going to be like, wow, that Marissa, when you first gave her life to Christ, is not the same one that exists today. And that happens when you stay in proximity to God. That's how you're going to stay in the right path. So spend time with God, and you're going to see that he's going to be all around you everywhere you go. Right, babe?
Yeah, that's good.
Okay. So that's the end of it. Thank you, everyone, who stuck around for these 35 minutes or so. Hope you enjoyed it. If you'd enjoyed it in any, whether you're listening on Android or Apple or in Anchor, leave us a like, a review, share it with somebody. you know, all we want to do is be a blessing for people. So leave a review, only great reviews and all stars. If it's not an all star, just send me a message on Instagram and I'll take it like a champ. But if it's like 4 or 5 stars, please leave it, share it with somebody. And thank you so much for joining us. We will see you next time for our Dominion podcast. It's been a blast. God bless you guys.
Bye, guys.
All right. You guys can sit down. How are you guys doing this morning? Good? Good. I'm glad that you guys made it out. Like Pastor Aaron said, I hope that, you know, today can be very refreshing for you. I know when I talk to people a lot of times, this idea of digital technology is kind of, it's kind of seems like a big whale. It seems like a big behemoth. Like, where do I take a bite at first? And so if you're just stepping into this area, you know, hopefully by the end of this, you kind of know exactly where your starting point is. That's why me and Matt really, you know, we told Aaron, like, we really want to just get through our talks, because when it comes to the Q&A and the live coaching, I believe that's where the most fruit is going to come from, because there's going to be people here who are in real estate, and we're going to be talking to a real estate agent. Chances are, if there's a particular field, between me and Matt, we've probably worked with that type of field digitally at some point. So there's no kind of particular area that may catch us off guard where we can kind of maybe help out. So whether you're starting out, whether you already own a business, whether your business is big or small, or whether you're an entrepreneur, or whether you just have a great idea, and you say, hey, how do you think I should start this idea? That's what we're here to do and to help you with. And so when I get started right now, one of my main positions on top of like what Pastor Aaron said is particularly here at Abundant Living, you know, some people may, you know, see me in whatever particular facet, but internally, you know, everyone kind of has like, you know, the CEO and the CHR, and you have the COO and all these other, what they call C-suite positions. If I had a position here internally, my probably main title and position would be the, and what I am for a lot of other churches, is the chief change officer. That's what people bring me in for, to change things. You can name some of the biggest churches in the U.S. I've gotten calls from them to help them change, whether it be from a white church who's all white, and their high school, they have a high school across the street from their church, and their high school is 80% African American. I don't know about you, but if you're going to have a church in a community and your high school across the street is majority African American and your church is all white, it's probably an issue somewhere in your system that's not reaching people. And so you probably should be reaching the people that are across the street from you. You know, it might be where you want to be start first. And so mega church. So they called me, and I mean, we spent weeks and months talking about what we can do there. An all African American church who their city didn't look like that. And they're a big church. They have about, I think, 100 campuses all throughout the globe, including the African countries and stuff like that. We worked with them on how to start to change their culture a little bit, to start to invite other people who aren't just African American. Other churches who didn't even have websites, other churches who had preschools on their campus, and no one was registering for preschool. And so I came in and I helped them run ads. And within their first 30 days, they got 5 signups just from the ads. Now, that may not, 5 people may not sound impressive, but when you're running an ad to say, just come to our preschool for $800 a month, yeah, 5 people signing up is a big deal, you know, when it's $800 a month. So, and they had no Facebook at all. I was like, let's run ads, show me your Facebook. And they're like, oh, our what? You know, and so I was like, dang, okay. Step one, create a Facebook, you know, and we went from there. So a lot of the things we do is help people change in their areas. And we sit down and we say, what are you doing right now? What's your system look like right now? And then I have people on my team that I've that I work with, that I bring in. So some of my video makers, they worked with Monster and Nordstrom's and all these other big names. And so we work together, and then I kind of send them where they need to go to kind of help these people, ministry and businesses, do what they do. So just to give you an idea, because I don't know where a lot of you raise your hand that you come to ALFC, I just want to give you an example. You know, I didn't do all these things by by myself, but I definitely led the teams on these things. And so if you've ever been part of Pastor Diego's leadership class, I've shared this video before, but just to give you an example of what it is. Now, what we did on stage, you're going to see the video. It's some things that we've done on our stage. There's a lot more internally across the board, but I feel like when you look at the video that I'm about to show you, it gives you insight as to what it is as we progressed into this new age. It's called the digital age, you know. My age, we slowly started getting smartphones as we were going to like college and stuff. But now, I mean, my son's 3 months year old and he watches over my shoulder while I'm on my phone. I mean, there's an age that's growing up that's completely digital. And if we're going to be business owners and entrepreneurs, if we're saying, hey, we're not going to touch that, then you're going to see here in a couple seconds in my we are drastically cutting out a demographic for business. I believe there's a miracle point that God puts his finger on and he'll expand our business. But there's also a wisdom point for us that says we need to know our market. And I'm going to share some of those statistics to kind of help us understand. But just to give you an idea, even internally here at this church, some things that we've affected change, and it goes over into the youth ministry and children's ministry, but it gives you a really just a bird's eye view to say, wow, I've been coming here that long and I really didn't even put my finger on that. Or you may be new to Abundant Living and you say, wow, I didn't even know this church was like that 5 years ago or 4 years ago. So just look at this video real quick. It's going to take you through three different years of kind of how we progress change within our own church to start to reach a new demographic. Now, to give you some insight, about 6 years ago, we did an average in our church of the average age of our church. What was the median age? And the median age was about 42, 43. In church world, anything over 40 basically means in the next 10 years, your church will die. That's a statistic that reads. So if your median age is over 40 years old, then your church is on its progress to close its doors one day. So we kind of had a problem with that, you know, that's something we didn't want. We didn't want in the next day. So currently today, our median age is 36 years old. We beat the 40. We did it in about 5 to 6 years. Which is not easy to do if you've ever tried to do something like that. So it included changing culture. This just gives you an idea. It's not everything we change, but you can really see it because everyone has sit in the pews before and kind of looked at the stage. It gives you an idea. So go, Jermaine, could you go ahead and play that video right now? So it's 2011, a little longer than 6 years ago.
The veil itself was 30 feet wide, 60 feet high. It was the thickness of it was a man's hand. It says that it took 100 priests the ability to move it. Yet when Jesus died upon the cross, the Bible says that the Father God ripped that veil from top to bottom as a recognition of what man couldn't do, he could do. As a sign to us that all of us will now have access to the Father, that he will no longer dwell and live in a building, but he will live in the hearts of man, that we no longer have to go through a priest to get to God. And thank God for the size of the man's hand, the change that's happened. Though it didn't happen the first time, though it didn't happen the sixth time, believe God that one day I'm going to look at this wife. One day I'm going to look at this husband. One day I'm going to look at this body. One day I'm going to look at this bank account. And I'm going to see the size of a man's hand, which is telling me God's moving. And the next thing I know, God's going to break loose the sky and rain is going to fall like I've never seen it before. I told you, just one more scripture. That Jesus went to hell so that I don't ever have to go to hell. I'm exempt from going to hell. I love the way it rolls off my tongue. I'm exempt from going to hell. I don't have to go to hell unless I want to go to hell. Colonel Robert.
All right, so just to give you an idea of some things, when you saw 2011, it's about 2011, 2012, what you just saw, which was present day, or it was last year or so, what we did in 2011, 2012, the end resolve we already knew. So it wasn't we were flying on the seat of our pants. We had a plan, and we knew to get people. So some people, you may be sitting here, was like, did I just remind anyone who's come to Abundant Living that long, like, oh yeah, that is how things used to look. They're like, oh, I kind of forgot about that. Like, I didn't know we were so old school. Like, that's crazy. Like, you see, like, so we needed a slow process so people didn't recognize that change was really happening. And so you could slowly see, like, from the first picture, you know, like, we were still filming in, you know, in old school, like, TV set, you know, aspect ratios. And then by the second video, a little bit of lights, a little bit of hue. And then we even got widescreen, you know, we even went to widescreen, but it wasn't HD yet or anything like that. And then, you know, you go to modern times and, you know, we have the LED wall and we have actually our HD broadcast cameras, because every weekend we broadcast globally on over 250,000 people watch our TV show every single weekend. And so all those things were known. And sometimes in business, the greatest thing you can do is create a plan and say, where are we transitioning this? And what steps are we going to take to transition this? And that's something we're always very mindful of. And so the first thing I just want to talk and share about is, because there's two aspects to this. I'm going to kind of, towards the end, because I'm going to get us kind of loosened up and thinking and stuff like that. So this first part is really strategy. If I have a team, or I'm running a team, or I want to create a team, what are some good strategies creatively that I could do to continue creative thinking? Because that's very important. You could become stale and stagnant really fast when you're thinking creatively. So this will help you. And then the second part is some social media insights to help you understand social media better. And hopefully we dive in more through the Q&A. That's what we really want. What I basically want to do here is just spark your mind for during the Q&A, during the live coaching, we can go in the nitty gritty. And you'll see here in my talk, like, right now we're going to take, you know, when you go to Hawaii and they try to sell you on the pitch of taking the helicopter to see a whole island, that's what we're doing right now. We're going to just see the whole island, and then we'll dive in based off of the questions that you have, or else we'd be here for 10 days talking about each platform. You know, we could talk about Pinterest for 2 days alone, you know, like, so that's what we're going to go right now. So the first thing is I'm going to go over really briefly, is 9 things I've learned working with a tech startup. 9 things I've learned working with a tech startup. You know, if you've never had the opportunity to visit a tech office like Pray.com, or I've also been to Facebook many times, and that's a crazy experience of its own. It's like its own Disneyland. You know, food is free. At Facebook headquarters, if you're feeling like you're not creative, they have retired contractors. They're retired wood makers. And you could go to a wood making suite and you can build a doghouse for the day for free and take it home just to create, get your creative juices flowing at Facebook. Like, that's what they have. They have a free ice cream bar for snacking. They have free daycare. They have free snacks every single place you go to, every corner you go to. Like, it's just, I want to live there. I want to just move there. It's like the greatest place I've ever been to in my life. And so so there's certain things that I picked up, are really specifically being able to be at the beginning front lines with Pray.com, because our church was really one of, it was really the second, but they say the first really on West Coast to expand it, first church to sign up for Pray.com. And now it has something over like 30,000 communities, not people, communities, different communities on the app. So in 12 months, it's really grown in a big way. And I when I first visited Pray.com, they had like 2 staff members. Now they're pushing 38 staff members or something like that. And so in 12 months, you go from not being worth a dollar to being worth over $50 million. Somebody, I want to pay attention. Hello. You know, like, what's your secret? You know, so they would always think that I was there to help them. But really, I'm like, man, I'm just trying to steal some ideas. This is crazy. Like, what are you guys doing? And that's what I'm going to do right now. I'm going to give you all the ideas that I jacked from them being in their office, and I've completely ripped off and used in my own leadership, you know? So here's the 9 things if you're taking them down. The first one right here is, first thing, Breaking bread is really important. So every time I'm at the office, there is, and I've told you with Facebook and stuff like that, starvation is real. Have you ever just sat in a meeting before and said, I just can't wait until this thing ends. I need a snack. I need something. So it's very important that when you gather, when you meet, and you think I'm joking, but you go to every app company in Silicon Valley and they all have snacks everywhere, everywhere. They have free Monsters, free pretzels, free muffins. Like they're just all over the place because they don't want snackage to be an excuse to not get things done. And so and we would say, oh, that never deters me. Stop lying. I've cut so many meetings short just because I wanted to go to lunch. So breaking bread is really important. That's what we do right here right now. That's why we fed you breakfast. So now your tummy don't have to grumble this whole time. Now you put up with everything we have to say because you're good. And so breaking bread is really important. And so when you do meetings, when you do group meetings, make sure there's something there. Apples, bananas, snacks, water, all that kind of stuff. It really does pay because people will pay attention to their hunger more than anything if they have it. The second one is, and this one tripped me out, because you would think we all know this, but it's on another level in Silicon Valley, in these app companies. Honesty. When something doesn't feel right, speak up. I mean, you know, I've been in meetings with them where the brutality of honesty is on another level. Like, I could not believe they were speaking to each other the way that they were speaking to each other. But I remember one of the other founders, there's four founders of Pray.com, he said, Adam, we've been entrusted with somebody else's money and it's gonna run out sometime soon. So we're not gonna fluff what we have to say just to protect someone else's emotions. There's money on the line. And so we need to speak honestly. And I thought, man, that's really good. You know, like, honesty is so important because that person may get offended by, and there's a way to bring something up, but how many of you guys know with some people, they're just gonna be offended just because you didn't like their idea. You could wrap it, you could send them a pink pony with it. They're gonna be mad because you didn't like their idea. And so let's just cut to the chase because there's finances on the line here. We can't, and that's like a really management mentality, but you have to have that when it comes to financially dividing things within the company. And then the third one, which is really big, constant feedback. So they have specific meetings established where all you do is sit down and add feedback towards one another. They have meetings where they literally call people in and they tell people, tell us where our app sucks. They don't say, tell us what you love about their app. They could care less what you love about their app. What they want to know is, what don't you like? Because if you're using their app, it's apparent you like it, you know. But what they want to know are, what are the things that's bothering you? Because that's how we can improve on. So whatever company you own or whatever entrepreneurship you're stepping into, it's having that ability to add constant feedback to say, what are we doing wrong? Let's sit down. Let's talk about it in a specific meeting that's very transparent, that helps us progress. Let's not look after people's feelings and emotions. We need to have a very open level playing field. And then number four, I'm just shooting through these ones. Constructive conflict. Being able to say, I disagree with you. I disagree with you. But it be constructive. It not just be emotional, but there be constructive conflict. Conflict is one of the greatest things that you could ever have in having creative processes. One of the greatest things. If you want to be an entrepreneur, if you want to start a business, if you want to move creatively and you're looking for anything but conflict, then this ain't the job for you. If I could be honest, management, leadership, it's not the job for you if you're not going to be willing to have conflict. It has to be there. I use this illustration all the time. You know, if I were to choose two chairs to sit in, if there was a raw chair, a raw one that had just been built, but it hasn't been sanded down, but then another chair has been sanded, I want to sit down in the sanded chair, the smooth chair. I don't want to sit in a raw chair that's going to give me splinters on my butt. It's going to be uncomfortable. And so the only way to get a chair smooth is to use sandpaper. And sandpaper is not comfortable. Sandpaper is not enjoyable. If I were to buy you a blanket made of sandpaper, you would not get an enjoyable night's sleep. But at the end of the day, we would choose a chair that's been sanded down, that's been polished, that's been conflicted on any day of the week than a raw chair. And a lot of times in our entrepreneurship, in our creative process, we want to sit in the raw chair. Because at the time, it seems like the most convenient, but it's not. It's not the best outlook for what it is that you're trying to do. So conflict is really important. Number five, try it. You know, they have this really big motto, and so does Facebook, and so does everyone else, if it sounds like a great idea, if it sounds like it could work, let's try it. Give it a shot. So if there's somebody here that's thinking entrepreneurially, thinking that there's something you want to go into, stop telling yourself no. Stop telling yourself the reasons why it won't work. Try it. Give it a shot. Work hard at it. You can do it. Go for it. And the market will tell you themselves whether it's a great idea or not. But don't let your negativity be the reason why you're not doing it, or your insecurities be the reason why you're not stepping into that field. Sometimes our insecurities will stop us from far more than people themselves. And so just try it. And I've learned that really well with praise. There's ideas that they'll have or will have, and they'll say, let's try it. So here's one of the things we did one time. We had an idea, and it happens now. There was this idea that on the app, when one of the faith leaders or pastors would post a prayer on pray.com, you would also get a text message of the full prayer. And I don't know if anyone here uses the app or anything like that, but you used to get a text message that had the full prayer on it. So we had an idea, and particularly Matt and Pray did, and they said, hey, we think that people aren't opening the app because they're getting the prayer in text message form, and it's keeping them from wanting to open the app. So before, because any change they do, I mean, it's days and weeks of coding. I mean, they got to build this thing from scratch. So Matt's like, we had this idea, Adam, for like the next week, can you post a prayer every day? But can you first, like, can you write the prayer app out? And then can you delete half of it? And then can you add dot, dot, dot to it? And then can you then post it? And then can you go in the app and re-edit it and then add the full prayer in? So that now when people get the text message, it'll say dot, dot, dot. And he said, we're going to, for the next 7 days, test the statistics if we get spikes into the app that people are opening it because they want to see the full prayer. And I was like, cool, let's do it. And we did it for 7 days. They found that tons of more people, the percentage was insane of how many people opened up the app. So then they coded it, and now it's a permanent feature. And so, but I could have said, hey, Matt, you know, it's really not a good time right now for me to do that. Let's not try it. That actually just sounds like a lot of work. Let's give up on it. And they would have missed out on a very valuable process that they found for the app. So it's trying things out, even at someone's inconvenience. That's what we have to do. And then the number six is mission. Every time you gather, remind each other of the mission that you guys stand for. That needs to always be at the forefront of your business, your company, your ministry. For us, it's seek the lost, teach the found, send the disciples. Every time we have a staff meeting, we ask our staff, what's our threefold vision? Everybody repeats it. Seek the lost, teach the found, send the disciples. And then we have seven vision pillars here in our church. And some of the things are like family-driven, leadership-driven, kingdom-minded. And so we as a staff, we go through all those every single time that we gather. And so if your company doesn't have that, or your entrepreneurship doesn't have that in your language, create that. And every time you guys have an official meeting, or even if you're meeting with yourself officially, bring it up on your phone and read it. Because you may say, I'm a one-man band. So have it on your phone. And every time you sit down for something, open it up and remind yourself of your vision so that you don't get swayed by the glitz and glamours of something else. So in our church, we weigh every decision based off of seek the lost, teach the found, send the disciples, and does it match our vision pillars? Someone may give us a great opportunity for something, but we'll say no to it if it doesn't match our vision pillars. And so always remind yourself of your mission, and that's something that Pray.com does very well, that they meet every single time. The next one is rebuild. Number seven. Rebuild. This is a big one. I'll tell you why. Because I recently did this with a company that makes millions of dollars. And I learned it at Pray.com. In the digital world, they have this thing called sprint design. You can look it up. There's a book on it. But in the tech world, it's called sprint design. It's where 5 days, right? You spend 5 days? You spend 5 days essentially tearing down all of your concepts and ideas that your company stands for and build them back up, and you see if your end result matches what you've been doing. And if it doesn't match, then you change everything to adapt that new concept. And I was invited to one of their days for it. And I mean, this was crazy. They even have a time master who's in charge of when people can pee. That's how like serious these things are. Like, you couldn't just go pee if you wanted to. And everybody has to leave all their phones and iPads outside. There's seven people in a room that's 4x4, and everybody just has post-it notes. And you spend 9 hours in that room. They even cater in lunch. No one's allowed to leave. So you have to eat inside. And the idea is to get so cut off from the world that you're stuck with just your idea. And if your idea doesn't make it out of that door, then it's time to change something. And if it does, then you're on track and you're doing a great job. And there, I was only involved for one of those days, but they do it for 5 days. And, you know, a few of the things. So I recently did it for, so the idea is maybe twice a year to tear down and rebuild, find out where you are and aren't doing. So I was recently working with this company that makes multi-millions of dollars. And we started up, so one of the things you start off first is what's your end resolve? What do you want your to do? So, you know, on the whiteboard with them, we put it down. They said, you know, we want our customer to do X, Y, and Z. And so, and one of the things that we realized, one of their mantras as a company is anyone can do the business that they're in. Anybody could be a part of it. Anyone can get involved in it. But through the process of rebuilding and building it back up, they constantly kept on saying, well, it's not for everyone. You know, it's just not for every, not everybody is gonna be good at this. And through our whole process, we spent about 6 hours doing post-it notes and whiteboarding and stuff like that. The end resolve was, this business is not for everybody. But their whole business mantra is, anyone can do it. So why weren't people hiring them or using them? Because what it is that they were actually speaking didn't match with what their vision and mission was. And so we left that meeting and said, okay, something needs to change in your process that explains to people this isn't for everybody because it's tricking people. And that's not good. That's why people are giving up. Rather than let's fix our language. And so then that whole rest of the day, language became really important for the company. And we helped facilitate a new language barrier and stuff like that. And so rebuilding and building it back up to what it is that you actually do. Because sometimes as a company, things may not be working, but it's because what it is that you do and communicate are two different things. So they need a match. And that's something I've seen that with Pray.com that do. Number eight, and we'll do really fast with these things and we'll jump into some social media stuff. The non-negotiables. What are your non-negotiables? So there needs to be some things that you literally won't change. It's fundamental to what it is that you do. And so it's being aware of that, writing that down, understanding that. What are your non-negotiables? And generally, they are the ones that match with your vision and your mission. Those are your non-negotiables. That's what we don't touch. And so that's something that you won't go there. And then the last one, audience. Know your audience. Is your audience people that are 40 to 70 years old? Is your audience for millennials? Is your audience for single mothers? Is your audience for mothers? Is your audience towards men and women? Is your audience towards women with children? Is your audience towards widows? Is your audience towards everybody? Usually it's not towards everyone. And we like to say that because it sounds like that'll make us the most money, but it's not true. You know, so we say, well, what I do is for everybody. It's really not, because it could be for people that make $100,000 or more a year. You know, so depending on what it is that you do, you know, it's understanding who my audience is. And obviously for Pray.com, we were just laughing about it. One time somebody came up to Matt angrily and they said, I'm an atheist. Can I use Pray.com? And Matt looks at him and says, I mean, if you pray, yeah. I mean, like, so he's not particularly their audience. They can crack their heads all day and say, man, how can we get atheists on this app to pray? That's like chasing the wind in that case right there. So that's not really their audience, you know. So going to colleges and speaking with the National Atheistic Board, you know, is like, it's not going to grow your company. You know, you might want to start first with people with faith. People who do pray, particularly charismatics and Pentecostals, because they pray a lot. So you want to get with them first, you know, or IHOP people. Like, that's who you want to connect with first, Assemblies of God. Go after those type of people, and then it'll trickle down. So you got to know your audience, you know. So that's what you have to do. So there's those slides. Now we're going to just jump into what I want to do right now, super aerial, as we Got a few more, maybe about 15 more minutes, and we'll do these really quick. So what I'm going to do now is just share some overarching statistics when it comes to social media. And so let me grab these slides real quick. Really what I want you to understand and what I'm about to say right now is really the grandeur of social media and what it's become and why it's so important that if you can start to take steps towards social media or using social media, or if you already are tailoring it a little bit more, then you'll be able to see increase in your business in a really big way. And the way I want you to see that, and like I said, during the live coaching and Q&A, we're going to really dive into this so that we can practically apply it. But this is just to get you to go, wow, I didn't know that, or I didn't recognize that, I didn't realize that. There's a reason why in Silicon Valley, Pray.com is not taking no money from nobody, but people in Silicon Valley can already say that's worth $50 million. Because why? Because it's the idea to them that's worth that much money. It's because they know that in Silicon Valley that social media, digital, is the way of the future. So you may not even be taking in money yet, but in this world, in this digital world, the very fact of having an idea and a business model and a beta version can be worth so much money because they know this is the way of the future. And I'm going to share some stats with you to get you thinking on this level. We're going to really dive in specifically on some people. So let's go to the first slide. So I'm just going to actually, we'll pass through that one. I can revisit it. Pass through that one. Okay, there we go. So here, let me just share some of these real quick. You can take a picture of it with your phone if you want, and then I'll share some other facts. So I'm just going to read through these. Here's some social media stats for you. Marketers and advertisers are putting 51% of their ad budget into mobile ads. So that's movies, TV, newspapers, clothing, food, McDonald's, Burger King, Macy's, you name them. For the average company, 51% of their ad budget is now going to mobile ads. That's big. That's big. Just 5 years ago, it was like 2%, 3%, just in 5 years. So you look how much things have changed in 5 years. Here's another stat. Close to half the world's population, 3 billion people are on some type of social media. Half the world's population is right here, connected to you in this way. Imagine if you could, if you're a business entrepreneur and you could tap into this to reach half of the world's population. There's no newspaper company, there's no movie, there's no news source that reaches half of the world's population. But what's in your fingertips does. And so 64% of online shoppers say that a video on social media helped them make their decision. That's one in every two people, essentially. Every other person says, and I'm one of those people, I don't buy nothing unless I've looked at it online. You know, like, that's where I do all my research. So next one, acknowledgement is key. 77%, it's a big one, of Twitter users appreciate a brand more when they tweet their tweet is responded to. It takes about 10 hours on average for, this is a really active business too, for businesses to respond to a tweet, even though customers want a response within 4 hours. So being very aware on how people are commenting, direct messaging you, you ignoring that email, you ignoring that review on Yelp, these are really important things. You not even having a Yelp if you're a physical business could be detrimental because people are trying to get in touch with you. People are trying to get in contact with you. So responding, being in a habit of every morning, maybe waking up at 6 a.m. and checking your socials on your business and say, I'm going to start responding to all these people. 86% of consumers say that they would appreciate mobile offers from a company while they're physically shopping in that company's store. So if you're a brick and mortar here, 86% of customers say they would like some type of mobile, if you bring this in, if you show us this coupon, we'll give you 10% off. If you do this, they want some type of activation from you that says, show us this, bring us this. It makes them feel more involved in the purchasing process. Whether it be $5 off, 10% off, whatever it is that your business can do, it says 86% of people would prefer that. 59% of adults between 18 and 29 are using Instagram. So right here, anyone here that's between the ages of 18 and 29, one in every other person is using Instagram. And this is pretty much daily. It's in some type of daily form. And so, again, if I can master this, if I can use this to my advantage, then that means if my audience is 18 to 29, man, I'm going to reach a lot of people if I'm trying to sell what it is that I'm trying to sell or get across. Marketers and advertisers are putting 51% of their budget in mobile ads. Sorry, that one I shared. 86% of women will look at social media before deciding to make a purchase. So that's almost every woman will look in some type of way digitally before they make a purchase, or it'll influence them in some type of way for the average person. 57% of all mobile users will not recommend a business if their mobile website is poorly designed or unresponsive. So again, one out of every two people will not recommend your business if your website is not up to date, is not up to date. So having a website is very, very important. Let's go to the next slide real quick. So here's just for you to be aware. And again, I told you this is going to be a really fast flyover site because we really want to dive into the nitty gritty with the Q&As and stuff like that. Here's your top social for ads, depending on what it is that your business is. And so I shared the top ones. These ones can really work to your advantage. So, and I'm going to share some statistics on some of them to get you thinking. So the number one place that they say to share ads on, if you're ever going to go into ad space, is Facebook. That has the number one return on any other investment when it comes to ads is through Facebook. So Facebook is the number one platform. Instagram is number two. So Facebook and Instagram, Facebook owns Instagram, so it's a really seamless process that you can, just with a little bit of training, you can understand it. And so Instagram is another place. Twitter is another place, and it's understanding your audience on what it is that you're trying to reach. Pinterest is a really big one, and I'm about to share some statistics. Pinterest is, if you don't know, it's like when you were younger, you would have like a board in your house, and you'd have your goals of like, this is the car I want, this is my dream outfit, this is what I want to look like, here's Jessica, so-and-so, famous person, this. Now it's just a digital version of it, and so it's called Pinterest. You pin on your board, things like that. So some people will have it for future landscaping for their house, and they'll have a Pinterest board here and stuff like that. So ads for that is really important, and I'll share it here in a second why. LinkedIn, that's really big. I'm going to share some. LinkedIn is business profiles. LinkedIn is your business identity, like your acumen, your resume is on LinkedIn. Snapchat is a big one. And then the last one, this is a newer one. This is actually one of my favorites. If anyone here is a physical business where you want people to come into your brick and mortar, Waze is the way to go. And so Waze is a mobile directions app. And we just started using Waze for our church, and it's given us the greatest return of investment than I've spent hundreds of thousands of dollars on ads. It's given me the greatest investment. And Jermaine, do you have the slide where it has like the little ways on the left and right? I just want to show. It's the next slide, right? So just give you an idea, this is kind of our ways for the church. So the way Waze works, it's a directions app. And so as you're driving and you're receiving directions on your phone, on the top, it'll actually pop down and it'll say like, are you hungry? McDonald's is a mile away. And you say, do you want to drive here? Or you could say, save it for later. And so what we've done as a church is we've said, deepen your relationship with God and develop meaningful relationships here at ALFC. And whenever somebody's within 2 square miles of the church, that ad will pop up on their phone. And so it'll if they're using the directions app, it'll pop up for that, and they'll get to see it. And we've had more website clicks. We had something in 30 days, we had something like 300,000 people see the ad, and we had over 2,000 people go into our website to get information on our service times. That's a lot, especially if you've done ads before. That's a big return on investment, and it cost us $300. It's not a lot. when it comes to ads, for 300,000 people to see that. And so the return on investment was really great for, and it pins in that people can save it and they could check it out later. So if your physical business address, Waze is 100% the way to go right now. If you're not at least spending $50, $100 on it a month, change that, find that in your budget, and start using Waze in that way. Let me just share some stats on some of these digital profiles real quick before we move on. So Facebook. Can we go back to that previous slide, Jermaine? So on Facebook, Facebook users, and you can write these down. I don't have a slide for it because I'm just going to give them really quick, and you can write them down because as you hear, if it correlates to your entrepreneurship, your business, your leadership, say, man, this is really good. Circle, I may need to get into that. Facebook users are 53% female, 47% male, which is really good in terms of statistics. 62% of online seniors age 65 and older, so Facebook is more of a seasoned an app for people. Younger people are on it, but the majority are going to be older people who are 40 and older. And so 62% of online seniors age 65 plus are on Facebook, and 72% are between. So 72% of Facebook users are between the age 50 and 64. So if you're a company that deals with retirement plans, hello, this is the place to talk about. If you need somebody who's got some money, if you want to go towards people who are looking towards buying homes, looking for selling homes, all that kind of stuff. You want to need an older audience if they're interested in selling homes. If you're in real estate, it's a place to go. You know, so older people, they're looking towards retirement. They want to downsize. And through Facebook, you can actually go as far as targeting people who Googled trying to sell their home yesterday. And you could target an ad to them. I could target an ad to somebody who just had a baby, you know, if I wanted to. And that's how directional Facebook can go in terms of, and you can exclude everybody else. You can drop a pin in your location. You can drop the radius, and you can say, I specifically want women this age to this age who just had a baby who are looking for baby clothes. You could do an ad for that, and it'll only go to those people. So Facebook is really good in that way, and a lot of people are on it. 88% of online users age 18 to 29 are on Facebook. 84% of those are 30 to 49. So Facebook all around from all ages, really great platform. Facebook has over 5 million advertisers as of 2017. 93% of marketers use Facebook advertising regularly. Images account for 75 to 90% of Facebook advertising. So 85% of Facebook users watch video with the sound off. Captioned videos can increase video view time by an average of 12%. So videos do really popular on Facebook. So moving towards the direction of making some content that has videos. And if you're going to have it, Facebook has an auto caption generator where people can read it, because sometimes a lot of people are watching these videos during their work. And if they got a cubicle, their neighbor can't hear them, and so they actually want caption. They want subtitles so that they can cheat their way, or their wife may be sleeping and they're on Facebook at 2 a.m. and they don't want to wake her, and so they're just reading captions all night. And so Instagram, if you post with a location, get 79% more engagement. So I'm here in Los Angeles, I'm here in Rancho Cucamonga, and when you post a picture at a location, does 79% more engagement. Photos with faces, personalities, people want the tangibility, gets 39% more likes. 39% more likes. Likes create engagement, creates growth. So adding as much of this physicality, this touch, this personality, this face as much as possible. Posts with at least one hashtag, average 12.6% more engagement. Instagram users engage more on weekdays, Tuesdays, and Thursdays, showing the most engagement. So as a business, I'm going to put a lot of my priorities on Tuesdays and Thursdays on posting. Make that really important. Use that to be the biggest giveaways. Use that to be the greatest interactions. And on weekends, kind of chill it through. A lot of time, our mind thinks, oh, people will interact more on weekends because they're off. But it's not. People actually want to look more on social media when they're at work than they are at home. So crazy. Yeah. Instagram videos get 2 times more engagement of photos than any other social media platform. So Instagram's special where you actually get double engagement just by having a video. There's something about that scroll. There's something about the way their app is optimized that if you do a video on Instagram, and we've seen it ourselves, even through my own personal social media, when I do videos, I mean, the amount of engagement is even triple, sometimes 4 times as much. So Instagram stories is really important too. The most popular hashtags on Instagram are love, Instagood, me, cute, and follow. Instagram influencers. So if you're saying, hey, I want somebody who has a big following on their social media profile to give a shout out to my business, they can charge up to $100,000 per post. So that's how much return an Instagram influence. It's just recently been said that Kylie Jenner, just for her to do a post shout out about your company, cost $1 million. $1 million, and people pay it. So when you see some of these women on social media and they're talking about Fashion Nova or whatever, like, they're paying them anywhere between $500,000 to $1 million just for one post. But the new generation of millennials trust influencers so much that if they shout out a brand or if they find love into a brand, those people will follow suit because they trust that influencer. So here's really an easy really thing to do that I tell people. Whether you own a barber shop, brick and mortar, whatever it is that you do, really simple. In Instagram, there's the search where you can search people's names. There's this thing right under it called explore, and you can explore by location. So what I would do is, what it does when you explore by location, people will tag the location they're in. And what Instagram does is it'll show you all the people who have tagged it, but on the top, it shows the people, the top 10 people with the most following right now who posted in the past 24 hours. So what I would do and what I've told business owners, let's take for instance, I'm a barber. So if I'm a barber, I'm going to go to that. I'm going to type in, my barbershop's in Rancho Cucamonga. I'm going to type in Rancho Cucamonga. I'm going to click, I'm going to find a male, because barbershops generally serve males. I'm going to find a male that has a large following, and I'm going to send him a direct message. I'm going to say, hey, John, I've noticed you have a great following. We're a local barbershop. I would love to give you 3 free haircuts. And if you find like our services are good, I would appreciate it. We would love it if you would give us a couple shout outs on your Instagram. So you're trading 2, 3, 4, whatever it is, haircuts, 4 shout outs. This person may have 100,000 followers. 100,000 followers, 10,000 followers equates trust. Because people, millennials will trust people on a digital platform. So that's something really simple that you can do if your business can serve in that type of way. So it's reaching out to people in that type of way. Maybe you do shirts, maybe you do something. Hey, I'd love to send you some of our shirts if you'd consider doing a shout out for us. That person may say, yeah, absolutely. I get hit up by Christian clothing lines all the time. I just say no because some of their stuff is corny. But because I'm a pastor, I get hit up all the time. Like, hey, we're a Christian clothing line. We'll send you some stuff if you'll shout us out. And I look at their website and I think, oh, man, this thing needs an update. So I usually say, no, I'm okay. Thank you so much. But they know the value in this person have followers. I know it'll have influence. And I have done it for people before. LinkedIn, 41% of millionaires use LinkedIn. Almost half of all millionaires are on LinkedIn. So to run ads is a great place. If financial planning, anything like that, LinkedIn is a great option. Real estate, great option for LinkedIn to find leads and stuff like that. LinkedIn profiles with professional headshots get 14 more times profile views. Finding a great photographer who will do professional headshots for you will go so far for you. How to list posts. So if you use LinkedIn here, the best posts to make on LinkedIn are how to get out of debt in 6 years, how to refinance your home in 3 simple ways, how to this, how to that, how to build your career in 6, blah, 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 blah. How to's. People really interact with that. And then let's Pinterest, and we're going to start to wind down so Matt can come on up here. Pinterest, 81% of Pinterest users are females. So if I own a clothing line, if my outreach and business is to women, I'm going to start paying attention to Pinterest. I'm going to say, how do my posts correlate to Pinterest? How am I sharing them on Pinterest? 81% of all Pinterest users are women. And millennials use Pinterest as much as Instagram. So as many people are as Instagram, that's how many people are on Pinterest. So if my business serves women, I need to create a Pinterest plan in that way. Half of Pinterest users earn $50,000 or greater per year. Pinterest is one of those things because it deals with tangible goods. People who have an aspiration to attain, to be able to buy things, people who generally have income are on Pinterest because it's a real goal that they're attaining. I want that clothing. I want this. So half of all Pinterest users earn $50,000 or more. So it's a great market with people with money is on Pinterest. 87% of pinners have purchased a product because of Pinterest. So it has a high return rate. 87% of pinners have purchased a product because of Pinterest. And then the last one, Snapchat. Active Snapchatters open the app 25 times a day. On average, people spend 34 minutes per day on Snapchat and send 34 messages. A custom geo filter could be seen by 40 to 60% of daily Snapchatters. So most Snapchatters are usually young people. People are teenagers and young adults. And so if my business serves that age, then and I have a local business or I do something, then I'm going to create a Snapchat filter from time to time so that they see it in that geolocation and they want to interact with it. That's really important as well. And then we're going to go to this last slide, the last couple slides, and we're going to close right here. Okay, so here's... I'm making it really simple. You could go really in-depth into these things. But there's two types of business marketing that I've seen. You could find a bunch of others, but commonly. You have the branded. That's like your company may be a branded company. You may own a bagel shop. Like, there's no face to it. You own a franchise, something like that. That's branded marketing. So on the left, you actually see an Instagram story ad from McDonald's, and the brand is McDonald's. And so you have to create a marketing strategy for your branded company. It means there's going to be no personal one-on-one interaction. It's going to be more on a company level interaction. Then you have, which is kind of more the predominant one today, what I call lead-based marketing. So there's a guy named, people may know, Gary Vaynerchuk. He's a lead-based marketer. He makes it seem like he just wants to be on social media to interact with you. But what he's doing is he wants you to like him so much that whatever business he pitches, you buy it. It's called lead-based marketing, which means his digital persona is so likable that he wants to create leads to all of his different businesses. So he owns a company called VaynerMedia. He also owns a company called Wine Library. But his persona online is very, hey, it's just me and you, man. We're a community. We're family. But what he's doing is he wants you to build trust with him so that when he pitches you a lead, you go, oh, man, I trust Gary Vee. I want to be with him. So most people here, if you're like you're in real estate, if you're a mortgage broker, if you're financial planning, you're lead-based. You need people to build a physical connection with you so that they trust what it is that you're going to pitch them. And sometimes you could think your company is branded, but it's not. People want to know, can I trust you? Can I have a relationship with you? Are you going to not do me wrong? Are you going to not cheat me? Then if you do financial planning or mortgage broking, that relationship will come, but they're not going to come based off the business. They're going to come off of, do I trust you? So it's being very aware as a lead-based person to show your life transparently, to really open up your life to people, to be on social media in a way. I remember one time, and I'll close with this, and bring that up because we're out of time, is one time I told somebody, I said, how many followers does your business page get? And they told me X amount of number. I said, on average, how many video views do you get on Facebook? He said, I get anywhere between 80 and 100. I said, okay, what are your videos usually like? And he was in financial planning. So he goes, usually my videos are like, hey, if you're interested in retirement, blah, 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 this and this, you know, come hit me up. Gets about 80 views. I said, this is what you're going to do. You're going to go on the top of Rancho. You're going to go find a nice piece of land, like a big land where all these multi-million dollar mansions are behind you. And you're going to do a video and you're going to say, I don't know about you, but my dream one day is to get to one of these houses. I want to work hard to get to one of these houses. And my company has the plan to get us there. Hit me up if you're interested in one day building a house like this. He had 2,000 views in 2 days with like over 200 comments. And so just the simple act of changing your language, changing the way that you're giving things, it'll change the game for you. So it's being aware of your audience, of your lead generation, and you think you're projecting a business. You're not. You're projecting yourself. Yourself is the greatest business acumen that you can give. Not your business, not your sales, not what you guys done. You. You're the greatest connector to somebody. People want to get to know you. And I know that's tough because we got a lot of humble people in the room. You know, I don't want to do that. Well, if you want it to grow, you want to be successful. People, millennials, they want to get to know you. They don't want to talk big business. They want to know, What are you like? And so start moving that direction. I think we'll close with this. Pastor Aaron, you could come on up. I'm going to start closing. Well, and I'll end with these two things. Pray found that someone is 70% more likely to engage with content if emojis are in it. So emojis are really big. So if you do social media, you don't do emojis, learn it, because 70% more people are likely to engage. And then the next slide, the next one, we won't show the video, but then the next slide, next one, Jermaine, we end with this right here. It's the one with Pastor. So this is an ad we did for Easter for the church. It was our most successful one. Basically, what he did was he was in his backyard. I walked up. I said, hey, Pastor, you're with your chickens. Can you do an ad inviting people to Easter? He was like, when? Do you want me to go to the church? I was like, no, right now with your chickens. Can you do a Facebook ad? And he was like, that's weird, but okay. And it was our most successful ad we've ever run as a church. In one day, it got 60,000 views, and it got 2,000 people that went into our website to get Easter times. The reason why was because he was a pastor who was a normal guy in his backyard with his chickens. And people's view of church is religious, money hungry, blah, blah, blah. What it did is it immediately, like people who were immediately skeptic, it brought their wall down and it had them engage with the content. So as authentic and transparent as you're willing to be, go there, because that's what people want to see. People want to see you with your kids. People want to see you, you know, I know Crystal here, Jason, they're one of the best people with it. They're very transparent on their social media. People love that. And so that's one thing that you can do and start doing right away. And if you don't have any of these social medias, just create accounts, okay? Go create a Facebook, go create an Instagram, go create a Snapchat. Whether you touch it or not, at least it's there for the day that you find someone that can help you with it, and you'll be there. All right, thank you guys.